The Guardian.
Hey listener, it's AC Jimbo again, delighted to be introducing the latest of Barry Glendening's all-star interviews with footballers from yesteryear. Today, Jimmy Bullard. Barry shared a round of golf with the former Fulham and Hull cheeky chappy back in March and discussed his injury-blighted career, his run-ins with various managers, and his time in the I'm a Celebrity jungle. Warning, this podcast contains bants.
Okay, Jim, thanks for agreeing to see us today.
No,
we're here at a driving range because your stranglehold on the media is continuing, I believe, with a new golf show. Is this correct?
Yeah, called Golf Juice. Stranglehold, if you want to call it that. But, I've been just jumped in at the deep end, really. Found myself with the first pilot today with DJ Spoonie. And, I've just got... it's about 9 months ago it came up, and there was a chat with a fella called Rab and his group of friends from Golf Juice, and they decided they wanted to make a golf show. Took it around to some production companies, got a production company on board, and now showing it to some TV people, and they're going to be here today, and it's my first ever presenting gig, so looking forward to it and buzzing, yeah.
And you're obviously a very good golfer yourself.
I love golf, yeah.
And you went professional after retiring
from
pro, football.
Yeah. Reason why I turned pro was you put your money in, mm-hmm. 260 quid to enter a tournament. If you're an amateur, you don't receive any winnings if you do well. So that's the only reason why I turned pro. Everyone thought, he's brilliant. He's going to, I had a few people going, he's a good goal. But to earn money at the pro game, you've got to be extra special, I turned pro just in case I had an off week, well, a good week, and I produced. I'm not going to be the next one on the main tour, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'd have loved to have progressed, but I just found it very double difficult, really. And I found it double difficult to dedicate myself. But I love golf.
Right, and is it true you tried to qualify for the British Open?
Yeah, I tried. I was close. I missed it by two, first stage. And I felt like I could have done it.
Yeah.
I felt like I should have done it and could have, really. I lost my swing last few holes. I always put myself in the deep end. But, golf for me is one of my hobbies that keeps me out of trouble after football, if you want. Same as fishing.
Yeah. And I think golf and fishing, they're both kind of solitary pursuits. Mm. Golf, obviously, you're playing with people, but there's this internal conflict going on. Fishing, you're sitting on your own at the riverbank. Gives you a lot of time to think.
Yeah,
a guy who famously doesn't like being on his own.
No.
So how do you reconcile?
It's weird. I know, that's a good question, actually. I hate being on my own. I suppose if my mind is occupied, it doesn't feel like I'm on my own. I've got the game, haven't I? I've got fishing or I've got golf, so I'm with something.
Yeah.
I don't have to be with someone, I suppose. As long as I'm with something, if that makes sense.
not a huge amount.
Oh, God. Do you know what I mean? As long as I've got my golf and fishing, I'm okay with myself. As soon as I don't have a hobby, I lose myself a little bit.
I've interviewed you before for The Observer.
How did that
I have,
go?
Yeah. You accused me of trying to touch you up.
I did accuse you, was touching me up.
I was not touching you.
Yeah.
I'm not that way inclined, but not that there's anything wrong with that. I got the impression at the time you just finished playing football that you were a little bit lost, not finding it difficult to come to terms with not playing football anymore. Was that the case? Is that still the case?
Yeah, still a little. It's fading. I struggled. It happens with a lot of footballers, I suppose. If you've done that and it really grabs you. Everyone's different as well. So I'm talking on how I felt. When I finished footy, I missed it so much. I felt like a part of me went, if you want, a part of me that I still... Because in my head, I could still play. But my body wouldn't allow me to. So I've just missed it that so much. Saturdays were my worst days, and still are. Saturdays, I wake up now and it's 12, 3 o'clock. I turn the TV on, it's football, football, football. I'm like, get that off. I can't watch it. I can't be around it. Because a lot of my mates still playing. You hear them names mentioned, you're like, I can still be there. I still want to be there. But deep down, I know it's got to end someday, and I always did. But it's just hard to come to terms with it, if that makes sense. And I miss it. I suppose if you miss something, you hold on to it that bit more and... But life goes on, doesn't it? It isn't as harsh as when I first finished. It's 3 years now, getting on for four, I think, something like that. So, it's fading slowly. And stuff like this gives me a little bit of a buzz that I once had. I suppose that's what I'm looking for, a buzz that what I once had. And stuff like this, if front of cameras. I suppose I'm a bit of an attention seeker. And I went in the jungle.
Yeah.
You know, bits like that keep me occupied and keep me, you know, give me that little bit of buzz what I want, says. Yeah, that's the best thing, best way I could describe it.
And a lot of players do seem to struggle with the transition.
Because it's such a high life, I suppose, because it's such a great way of living. You know, it's at the end of the day, if you ask 10 boys in a playground what they want to be, 8 of them will say professional football player. If you went to any, you know, any school for me, you know, from being a boy, that's all I ever wanted to do. And then all of a sudden achieving that, then all of a sudden finishing, you know, you don't want it to finish. So that is such a high life and such a great way to live, playing football for a living, and all of a sudden it's gone. So, yeah.
And does the fact that you weren't able to go out on your own terms, you were kind of forced out because of your knee, does that make it more of a hardship?
Yeah.
I mean, I think your last game was against Northampton in the Johnston James
right.
Trophy.
Yeah, you've done
not,
your own
probably
work,
not what you'd envisaged, is it?
No, and that's right. And also, your career's dipping. My career, let's have it right. You can't go for so long, it's dipping. I went, no disrespect to the football clubs, but I was in a Premier League with Hull, Fulham, Hull. Then all of a sudden, I go to Ipswich, you're in the Championship. Then all of a sudden, I drop down to MK Dons. So, you know, you know yourself, you can't do what you once did. So your career's dipping. And that's another thing you got to deal with. But as long as I was playing football, I could deal with that. And then, as you say, I had an injury again on my... Basically, towards the end of my career, I felt like a glass ornament out there. And whatever happened, I would get injured. If someone leant on me, I'd get injured. And there was one thing that happened at MK Dons. I was training. And Alan Smith, he used to play at Man United. I remember him leant on me. He just, all he does was leant on me. And I fell over. Like a bag of crap, really. Like, and I just thought, it took me about 30 seconds to get up, and I thought, I've had it here. I'd have been gone there. Back in the day, I would have been gone. He wouldn't have even smelt me. And then I thought, nah, it's time to hang him up. And I woke up one Monday morning, and I phoned Cole Robinson, the manager at MK Dons, and said, that's my lot, Cole. And he went, take your time. And they were great down there, Peter, the chairman, and Cole. And they said, take your time with Big Mickey Arford. And 2 weeks out of that, I called it a day, and that was that.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, and afterwards, to keep me thinking, I set up a company as well, because players do struggle that much, and I did. I know other players, and you hear stories of Gary Speed and this and that, you know, it's terrible stories. We set up a company called X Time Management to help players if they want, because other players are scared to opinionate that they are struggling with missing football. And they hold secrets, like everyone does, you know. So we set up a company called X Time Management that seems to be going really well. And just hopefully, we started with football players, giving them their next sort of career, if you want, or just using us to get work. You know, whatever way you want to use us. That's how I pitch it to the boys. Use us to get you work. We've got some great contacts. And go from there and build yourself a new career, because it doesn't finish out of football. So, and we started off footballers, but it's going out to all sportsmen there and women, so...
Because you do tend to see, towards the end of their careers, footballers who may not have been particularly media-friendly in their pomp, they suddenly I need something to do
that's
now.
That's the other thing that we push. That's the thing in at the minute. Yeah, media, media, media. That's the other side we push. It isn't just media we want to put. Anything that yous want to do, anything that they want to do, whatever they want to do, we're help, you know. It's not just media. That's the dumb thing. Everyone thinks... Oh, you got to go into media, you know. Jamie Redknapp's done it. Robbie Savage has done it. Danny Murphy's done it. Jimmy Bullard's. No. There's another million jobs out there, you know. There's another million things you can put your mind to. So that's the other thing we go and source from, you know.
During your career, you had 2 very long spells out with knee injuries. And, you know, we all envy the footballer lifestyle and the money and... it's great, the crowds, the adulation of the crowds. But when you're on your own recuperating from an injury like that, how can you talk us through what kind of an empty experience that is?
Well, coming through injury, like...
Yeah, just going through rehab and...
The same again, everyone would be different. Me was an absolute nightmare.
Right.
It's one I struggle with, boredom. I really do. You know, when I get bored... I'll get mischievous and I'll get, you know, terrible, you know, I just end up playing up, basically. So when I was first injured with Chris Coleman under Fulham, he was a manager that would sort of, he could relate to me, I could relate to him. So it was fine. I found it hard because I didn't think I'd play again, but my training, he would sort of say, go away for 2-3 weeks, Jim. You ain't playing for another 12, 16 months. You know, he knew what I wanted. Then all of a sudden, I'm under the likes of someone like Roy Hodgson, who really didn't see what I was about and really didn't understand where I was coming from. And it's sort of an odd sort of connection. Do you get what I mean? So it all depends what manager you're with, what team you're with, what club you're with. But me, I struggled. I struggled with it. I miss footballing massively. I just miss playing. And the thing is with injured pros is you go in, you go into a medical room. I used to get in there extra early because I knew that the more time I spent with the boys, the more I loved it. So if I'm in extra early, I can spend more time with the boys because I know they're training at half. They're going out at 10 o'clock. I got on at 8:30, 9 o'clock, spend an hour. They've gone for 2.5 hours. I'm in on my own with a physio. Like, that's shit. That's the bit that grabs you. You're watching them train and you're like, you can't do nothing. You're on a machine that's like putting electro waves through your blood and ligaments. Like, you're a professional football player. You don't want to be on a bed. No, I've done that for 12 months. Yeah. Just a nightmare.
And you also had long hours on exercise bikes next door to Owen Hargreaves in Colorado.
It's a weird thing, you know. If you meet someone, he was injured, obviously I was injured, and we met him out all the way out there in Colorado. Then all of a sudden we become quite close and done our workouts together, and everywhere I popped up I see Owen Hargreaves, which it's just weird meeting someone of that stature at a place where you just can't really relate to football because it's so far away. You ain't speaking about football. All you're speaking about is just general stuff and just getting fit, really. And I found I grew quite close to him. You know, at that specific time, I got quite close to Owen. And he ended up living out there. He ended up living in Colorado to get fit. He wanted to get fit that much. He ended up renting a place out there. But that was the worst 3 weeks of my life going out there.
Is he that bad company?
I didn't mean that in all zone. I didn't mean that in all zone. But it's just like bottom of the ski slope, 4 foot of snow everywhere. It's just a place that I don't want to be, you know. Walking around with crutches, like spikes on the bottom of crutches. Just a disaster. End up dragging my brother out there because I was forever going backwards and forwards. And I ended up dragging my brother out there for 2-3 weeks. And we go to mum and dad's meet up, we even say like that's the worst 2-3 weeks of his life and he weren't even injured. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, you know, when you like your own stuff, you like your own place. So yeah, staying in a hotel that and eating foods that you know, even like American foods done with different fats, it's disgusting. I just hated it from start to finish.
Right. You obviously have this reputation for being a bit of a clown and a joker. You know, we've seen the half-time team talk at Man City, the Everton thing, the big dunk thing. Does it ever bother you that sort of eclipses the fact that
you
get remembered for that, right?
Yeah.
You were a pretty good footballer.
I get asked that all the time. No, I like that. I suppose I like that. And I strive on that. And the older I got, the more I played on it. I got more confident. I got more, you know, because when I was 20, 21, I was never that. 22, 23, maybe a little bit. 24, 25, I come into that. 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. I'm known as the laugh, the mess about, the joker, you know, the always looking for a prank. So that I grew into that, if you want. And I loved it. Yeah, and you're dead right. Every time I'm out on the street, people come to me and a boy come up to me and goes, God, what about what you done with Duncan Ferguson when you didn't know what you was doing? And when you jumped over the crowd and when you was on soccer home, you done it. You know, I get, not, that's a good goal you scored, Jim. I get that all the time. And I even say, I did used to play football, you know, I was quite good. But yeah, you're right, that's what I got noticed for and I loved it, you know. And there is a 1% of me that would change and that masked my football at all, no.
Because
I knew I was decent in here.
So you say you kind of played on it. What,
yeah.
Did it become a duty?
No, I suppose I wanted that. I like that. You know, have you met Jim before? He's nuts, him. He's crackers. You won't never beat him in a bit about it. Honestly, he'd go to the ridiculous levels. And so I suppose I like that. And I suppose, I grew into that role, if you want. You know, because comedians, I'm not saying I'm a comedian, but they're not a comedian at 17, are they? Sometimes something are happening in their life and they become that. And that's what happened to me. At 19, I was the shyest young kid you've ever seen. I wouldn't pick up the phone at 16 years of age. I was at Dartford Football Club, and my manager was called Gary Julians. My mum said, you've got to go to Gray's Inn Northfleet. They want you. They're going to pay you more money. It's a better football club. And you ain't playing at Dartford. You've got to call Gary Julians and let him know. I said, I'm not calling a manager. I said, nah. I was too scared. 16 this was. I swear down. I got my dad to phone him up. That's too kind. Now, I'd be the first one on the phone. I'm knocking his door now. So, difference in person, really, and confidence grew really quickly for football. And that's what else football done. And that's what else happens when, you know, you got crowd giving you grief every week. And it makes you stronger, really. You know, it makes you, in every little thing that happened to me in my career, it makes you stronger, definitely.
And in the office environment, anyway, so there's a fine line between someone who's a good laugh and the life and soul and the guy who's just a complete arsehole.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that you cross that?
I suppose I do with each individual.
Right.
There is lines, you know. It is a... Well, how can I say? I would never... Like, I know you more than I know this man. So I could give you some about you touching my leg and all. I'd never say it to him. I don't know him. Do you get what I mean? So, automatically, I can give you more than I can give him.
Yeah.
So, I suppose I'm playing a sort of game with my own head, which is a bit weird. Roy Hodgson, I'd never give Roy Hodgson as much as I'd give Chris Coleman as manager. I know I can't really say that to Roy. He's a respectable man. He's quite a different man. Chris Coleman's a player. He was in player mode. He knows exactly where I'm coming from. And so... But there are times when you cross the line, don't get me wrong, and that's when you come a bit unstuck and you know, sorry, you've got to apologise, haven't you?
Yeah,
I suppose it's just a game to me, isn't it? In a weird way. I've never thought about it, really. It just happens. It just happens.
So, right,
does that
just
make
shattered
sense?
Your confidence.
Does that make sense? No,
yes.
You'd never shatter my confidence. This is unshatterable.
Okay. You talk about Roy Hodgson there. You didn't get on great with him, did you?
It wasn't... No, I didn't. I just struggled to understand where he was coming from a lot of the time, you know? He'd done a lot of things that I didn't agree with as well, so gradually when that happens, that grows on you. But also use Roy Hodgson, because he's a great... to tell my career and my stories the way I see them. And I'm not saying I'm right, because he'd have stories about me and say I'm wrong. I'll hold my hands up. But he's a great use for me, you know what I mean? He's a manager that... A great manager, I've always said that. But telling my stories in a way, I'll get it across. Chris Coleman's a different scale as a manager, same as Barry Fry and Roy Hodgson's here. So it's a great scope for me to tell a story. Do you get what I'm saying there? He's totally different to Chris Coleman.
Yeah.
And he'd see life and general football and the person as me totally different to Chris Coleman sees me.
Well, when you were trying to negotiate a new contract at Fulham.
Yeah.
Well, you'd 16 months left.
Yeah.
You were injury prone, so you wanted a longer deal. He didn't turn up for a meeting, was that correct?
No, yeah. Like, that was one of the things that, you know, when that happens to you as a person, you know, it's sod football. Forget about football for 1 minute. Say you're in an office and you've got a new contract coming up, and the chairman and you're meeting your governor, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to give you a new contract face to face. Get a meeting. And all of a sudden, I've got a meeting. And I bring my agent and the chief exec sitting there from your office, and all of a sudden your governor doesn't turn up and you phone him, he's on a golf course. You know, that don't put you, you know, he's telling you one thing, he don't really want you. You know, so tell me one thing and do another, for me, was, you know, you just don't do that. It's cut all the other bullshit, cut all the other stuff you want to talk about. You just don't do that to a person and a man, to me. I would never do that. And the way I've been brought up, I'd never do, you know. I'd rather say to the men, no, we don't want to give you a contract. I know where I am. Football club know where they are. I'm just not sure Fulham knew they were. I felt they were scared of telling me they don't want to give me a new contract because we know you're injury prone. That's the only thing I got. But as a football club, tell me. You know, tell me, you know. Tell me as a football club, then I can go off, you know. But I think, you know, they was there protecting me as well. Do you get what I mean? The football club were fantastic. It's just Roy's side. I just didn't understand where he's coming from. I just really didn't. But listen, that happens, and that has another learning curve. And then I knew from there, hang on a minute, this, you know, where the more money's involved now, this gets a bit spiteful. This is like, Jim, you're in the real world now. Like, start looking after yourself a bit, because this, you know, if you can't get a new contract, who's going to take you with a dodgy knee?
Yeah.
Because you've got a dodgy knee. It was lucky Hull did. Hull took a gamble. Cole took a massive gamble.
Which backfired spectacularly.
Yeah, and it can do. And that's, you know, I was gutted for them. Of course I was. I was gutted for myself. I was gutted for them. Blimey, you know, first game, wallop, do your knee. So that's how quick it can happen. But as a football player, of course, if I wanted to play that as good as I could as well. And everyone says, you know, you went up to Old Firm. No, it wasn't that. You've got to understand, I wanted to play for a football club that wanted me as well. I'm not just going to go. I had long chats with Phil Brown. I'm not going to sign for a football club for a large amount of money if they don't really want me. I ain't going to happen, believe me. I wouldn't have gone. Fulham still didn't want me, and I still thought, Eden, now you asked the chief executive who's still there now. I was knocking on his door, left, right and centre. I want a new contract here, I love it here. As soon as he said, you can go and look for another contract, Jim, we're not going to be able to give you it. Well, I can't do no more, and that's what Fulham Football Club told me. So then I go after Hull, they give me the contract, they give me a fantastic contract. They also give me the belief that they're bringing in new players and had great incentive to staying up and doing great things. Had the likes of Giovanni, George Boateng, Bernard Mendy. You know, they had some great players there. They was having a right good go, and I thought, this is where I want to be. And Phil Brown was the most, I would say, ambitious manager I've ever played for. The most ambitious. He wanted to achieve the biggest things, and he weren't scared to voice his opinion. Now, a lot of people say that he's this and he's that, but for me, Phil Brown was one of the most honest players I've played for. So.
Some Hull fans think you saw... They're not big fans of yours, do you?
Oh, 100%, I get that.
Why do you think it is, or what would you say to them in your defence?
I haven't got to defend. It's not defending myself, it's going to tell the actual... I'm going to tell you now exactly what happened, and you make your own. I went up there, I'm a fan, so I know. If my football club buys someone for £5 million and get injured the first week, I'd say, what's that? It's crap money spent. He's got injured, he had a dodgy knee, you knew that. But... I passed every medical possible. I knew. I even played at West Ham, and I was in my prime then as well. That's what you've got to understand. I was in my prime. Then all of a sudden it takes me 6 months to get going. I come back a bit slow. But after then I played great. I think I had 12, 16 games. I was fine. Everything was rosy. I got injured again. I think it was my other leg. I remember it now. Villa. I've gone up for an header. I landed over James Milner. Landed on my head and still done my knee. Like, how can you land on your head and do your knee? It's embarrassing. So then I just thought I went from bad to worse. And I suppose a little bit of me, you know, Hull's quite a close place. So, you know, fans see what they don't want to see. You know, I could be in a bar and having a bite to eat and you should be training. Oh, 6, 7 o'clock at night. You know, you get fans coming up to you. You know, they want to see you out on the pitch. But if I'm not fit, I can't get out on the pitch. It's as simple as that. And they see me being my laughing and jokey self. He should be laughing and joking. He should be more serious. I just am who I am. You know what I mean? They want me out on the pitch, grinding for their team, which I wanted to do, but my body wouldn't allow me to do that. And that's the reason, you know, little things. Another thing with Hull City, if one person sees it, it's like 100 people see it. It's very close. I don't know if you ever... I lived in Hull. It's another thing that I done. I lived in Hull. I wanted to, you know, live and breathe how they lived up there. I wanted to feel the whole thing. So I live literally 5 minutes from the stadium. People say, you shouldn't really live. I said, I want to live. So I want to live. I want to feel it. I want to...
Well, were you behaving yourself or were you out drinking too much?
I've never been a drinker too much. And that's the thing that I've always done. When I was injured, I used to go out. When I was allowed out and I knew I wouldn't get a telling off from the manager, of course. But it was never over excessive. It was by far from that. But people, you know, one story, then it all of a sudden build as Jim's an alcoholic and a drug addict. It's a mile away from the truth. Do you get what I mean? It's like, blimey, how these stories get escalated is scary. But I can see, and all of a sudden, a supporter hear that, then another one, then on the terrace before, you know, you're alcoholic, you don't give a fuck about the football club.
Yeah.
But that's football, that's fans. That's something that I've took on board ever since a kid. I know that can happen. I didn't think it'd ever happen to me. I'd always thought I'd never get injured. I'd be all right. Michael Owens of this world, Owen Hargreaves, now they're injury prone. All of a sudden, 27, I was injury prone. And it can happen.
Why do you think that is? Why you or Hargreaves or Michael Owen are injury prone? Frank Lampard can play for 16 years without ever
being injured. I just think... bit of luck, a bit of timing, you know, anything can happen. the way I had my first injury was, let me tell you, if anyone's legs there, it's getting snapped, and then you're struggling to get back. In fact, if anyone had an injury that I had, because I was quite slight, I'd done well getting back. If that's a big fella, had that serious injury, he's struggling getting back, because I snapped four ligaments in my knee, and I don't know any other injury that snapped four at the same time. That was like, that's serious injury. You know, it's all right doing one cruciate, a lot of people come back 9 months, but if you do the two cruciates, a lateral and a medial, severe snap, all come away from the bottom, that's a car crash. That's, you know, and that took 18 months. So, to answer your question, is luck, isn't it, timing, it's meant to be, is it meant to be, whatever you believe in, you know, but you can't, never gonna put your finger on that, you know.
Do you ever feel guilty picking up the money when you're not doing anything?
Yeah, of course. There is a little bit of guilt, and you ask yourself questions, you know. Of course there is, you know. There was with me. I can only think with me. But at the end of the day, I still believed I could go out there and play. And I still believed I had my injury, I'm going to be out 9 months. Still believe I'd give my best here, 3.5 years. I'm going to have a right good go. Don't worry about that, you know. And the manager and the coach and the physios are all behind me. So, yeah, a little bit of guilt, obviously. But at the same time, I was focused on coming back and playing at one day. You know what I mean? I'm still a whole player. I'm still got to believe that I'm going to come back and perform for them and earn the worth, really. That's how I see it. And that's how, when I used to have interviews up there, I'll show you. I used to always say that. I'll prove to yous that I was worth that. I didn't, but I felt like I could at the time. I felt like I was.
When you got your England call-ups,
yeah,
I presume it was a huge thrill, but I've heard you describe your time away, you know, with the England squad, and it just sounds really boring and regimented, yeah, and tedious. Was that the case?
No, a little bit, yeah. Not all of it, because the first bit I was buzzing. Like, obviously, and I don't want to be, anyone reading this, it comes across that I'm a bit disrespectful towards him. It isn't that. I'm not trying to give that impression, because it's the greatest honour you can ever have, and it was me. But what I'm trying to say is, with my football club, with the players I knew, and I'm a little bit weird like that. If I know a group of players with a football club, I feel at home. I feel like I can be the joke, have a laugh, I can say anything to you, or I got lines again, I can say anything to you. I go away with England. I don't know half of them, as I know my players. So I found it a bit hard to be myself. And with that, I don't enjoy it as much. That's what I'm trying to get at. But at the same time, I know I'm playing at Ringland, so believe me, there weren't one bit I'd never go again. But I just found it very, you know, you'd go and have something to eat, you'd go in your room, do that for 2 weeks. You'd have a little bit of banter with the boys, but it was nothing like your club. And I suppose that's natural, because it never is going to be, because you don't know them as well as your club. But for me, I'd love it to be more of a club scene, if that makes sense.
Do you think that's part of the reason they don't do very well?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Also, another defence for that, because I felt that, it doesn't mean every other player's feeling that. It was my first time and my only time. Well, I had two or three, but in a hotel for 2 weeks. So for me to feel that, the others may not have felt that. I'll tell you this, because I felt that.
But I'd imagine...
But does that affect...
Young guys, you know, boys will be boys, they're going to get bored. And I know you're being very well looked after and the food's great and it's a lovely hotel, but it's almost like being in prison, you know. You're told when to sleep, when to eat, when to...
A little bit,
more relaxed, the players might...
I've always felt that. That's me, I've always felt that, and that's what always made... the football club where I was at, I'd always push for that. You know, Gaff, why do we have to be in a room? What are you putting a curfew on at 9 o'clock? What's that all about? 33 years of age or 20, you know. Why put curfews on? I just feel a bit shackled, like, you know, little things like that. I just felt it's not needed. If I ever run a football club, I wouldn't want it run like that. You know, at the end of the day.
If you ever ran a football club, it would be...
It'd be fucked.
Relegated within a fortnight.
You think that, don't you?
Yeah,
but I don't think we would, see.
Do you think?
No, I think we'd be very good. don't worry about that. I'd always have respect from the players, and there's other ways you can gain respect without having putting shackles on boys. You can gain respect by speaking properly to them, speaking honest, and telling them what's right and wrong, and learning them, you know, and teaching them. For me, there was too many, especially towards the end of my career. It's just got a bit too much, you know.
You never actually got the England cap. How much of a blow was that?
gutted.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that I'm a bit gutted about in my career. First one was Celtic. I had a chance to sign for Celtic. I'll always think I should have done that. Just wasn't right time at that time. And the second one was, yeah, I didn't get a bloody England cap, did I? Yeah. But
would you more than made up for that by going on, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here?
I'm not sure about that.
Was that...
That didn't last long either.
Was that for the money? Did you think it might be a laugh? Or was it, again, to benefit Brand Bullard?
Yeah. No, exactly, to benefit Brand Bullard, if you want. I've done that, nothing to do with me. I got 25 grand for that gig. I got 25 grand and...
I thought, wasn't there a number being bandied about,
yeah,
about
was.
10
That's
times
what I'm saying. It's a load of rubbish.
Oh, OK.
It's embarrassing. Sometimes what you read is by far the truth. This is why I'd rather do an interview like yous do it properly and then you can tell the truth. I got 25 grand for doing that. I tried to get more, they wouldn't give it me. And I was just privileged to be in the show. It's a massive show, I've watched it. I've become a bit stale with work. I didn't have a lot. And Jimbo, my agent, went, Jim, get on there. Because loads of people have used it as a platform to go and develop and get some work afterwards, i.e. Golf Juices has come up.
Right.
You know, so go and do it. I think you'll benefit. I think it's a bit of you and I think you enjoy it. And where I was in life at the moment, I was a bit bored, a bit stagnant. And, you know, I was a bit like, oh, come up perfect time for me. And yeah, so to answer your question, I just done it for me, really.
Yeah.
I done it for me. And that's it.
And you got accused of bullying on it.
Yeah, I got accused, yeah. That was just so ridiculous. Like, I see the clip and it's like, I know where they're coming from with it. And yeah, it does seem harsh, but it wasn't like that.
I'll be honest, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was just a clip, me saying to Jake. And also what you don't see is, when there's 3-4 boys in all day and we're all giving each other some, believe me, they give it as much as I ever give them. But when it's all edited and shown how they want to show it, and I can see how, but it was, me and Jake are close now, and we always was. To be fair, I was probably his best mate in camp, so how can I be called as bullying? Jake answered all the questions when he came out. He said, no, he couldn't even remember the clip, because I slaughtered him every day.
Right.
I peppered him every day. And if you want to call it bullying, yeah, I bullied him every day. It was embarrassing. But I'll give everyone stick. I'll give Edwina as much as I'd give Jake. I mullered Edwina. I mullered her. Like, bad. A Barnet every day. What's she doing? The John Major thing. Every day I brung it up. It's happened, isn't it? So you've got to give it to her, haven't you? That's exactly what it was. That didn't get shown, though. That's better footage than me showing two blokes going out. It's crap. Show me destroying Edwina. That'd be better.
Finally, there's one thing I'm intrigued by. Is you see... You don't watch football a huge amount.
Not hugely, no.
And yet you cite Juan Román Riquelme as one of your big influences.
Yeah.
How did that come to be the case? He's kind of a cult figure.
Yeah,
it's
surprised how much you can see on YouTube. See, yeah. To watch a football match, you don't... I like watching players. I don't really... I do watch football, you know. I like to watch the great games. If there's a great game on, like a Man United v Arsenal, or a big game if you want, and I do watch the odd games, the crap games if you want, West Brom v Stoke, you know what I mean? But like your real big games, your crunches, Barca's, Real, you know, Betis and all that. And I just love class football. I love watching. And how I learnt about Riquelme was YouTube. You know, I got on YouTube and old videos of Zidane and Bestie, I got all them. And then I, as you mentioned, Riquelme, I heard about this boy and I watched him a few times when he played against Real Madrid. It was a Real Madrid game. I only found out about this boy and he was playing for Villarreal, I think it was.
Yeah.
All yellow kit. And that's when I first see him. And I see him as a kid as well a little bit. I heard a little bit about him because Danny Murphy used to play for England and he played against him. And he said he's unbelievable. And then I started intrigued by him and I watched him. It was fucking unbelievable. And that's how I found out about Riquelme. Yeah, not by watching so much football, but just eyes and ears and interviews. And thought, you know, I'm YouTubed up to the max. It's amazing how much you watch for YouTube. And after that, you get onto watching lions and goats fighting and stuff. It's quite weird.
All right, Jim.
But it's mad. You go on YouTube, and then you go on car crashes, then you go on planes really struggling to land, and then you go on earthquakes, and you go on aliens. Yeah. It's mad, YouTube.
Good. Right. Well, thank you very much
for
your time.
Cheers. Thanks. I enjoyed it.
And spend more time
thank
in front
you.
Of different cameras.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Jim.